Welcome to 2023 and our first and spring edition of the CEO podcast for peer-to-peer. I'm Beth Ann Stube, ILTA's Director of Publications and Press, and I am, as always, thrilled to be joined by our CEO, Joy Heath Rush. Joy, welcome.
Hey, Beth Ann, and happy almost spring and happy March Madness.
Yes, I am very excited about that because there's a tie into our Legal Week sessions for March Madness, but even more so the idea that spring is just around the corner.
Thank heavens.
Yes. And we actually have a lot to talk about. You've been heavily traveling. You were just at the ABA Tech Show. We're leaving for Legal Week in exactly 1 week. And there's just so many new and differing kinds of events, both in person for ILTA and online. So let's dive in. What have you been up to first? And can we talk a little bit about the ABA Tech Show?
Yeah, I've been up to a few interesting things. And one was the Microsoft Legal Summit in January, which we can also talk about a little if you want, at ABA Tech Show right at the beginning of March. And then I participated in an International Women's Day event at one of our member firms in New York last week, which was such an honor, such a blast. But one of the things that was interesting to me, I'm going to kind of highlight the ABA Tech Show, because that event's moved from February to March. It was the first time it's been fully in person, you know, since before the pandemic. This is one of the themes. And I found a level of energy, kind of rejuvenation of that event, which was great to see. And one of the reasons I love to attend, it's in Chicago, which is makes it nice for me. But I love to attend because it's really a lawyer audience. There are some tech people there, and certainly in the exhibit hall, there are plenty of tech people. But the audience is largely lawyers. And so what I learn when I go to ABA Tech Show is what the lawyers are worried about, what they're thinking about, what technology problems they're trying to solve, where some of maybe confusion is about technology. And, you know, I just always find those conversations absolutely fascinating.
I think it's a really interesting split for us when we talk about our own conferences, specifically ILTACON and LegalSec. We talk about the differences in audience types, but this is something that's a little bit more programmatic in their outreach that we don't necessarily do and that we've been trying to adapt more of.
Yeah, and I think one reason is it's an important source of CLE credits. You know, really all the sessions are CLE accredited, so it's a good opportunity for lawyers to gain those credits, particularly those hard to get ethics credits. And as more states, I suspect, will go down the path of the state of New York and requiring, you know, specific technology CLEs, there may be even more of a kind of blurring of the lines and opportunities for us to, you know, to cooperate and work together on this education. And for me, I was on two panels. I was one about technology competence and one on how to use surveys and survey data to drive technology decisions. And the technology competence conversation is a very important one. I mean, over 40 states now have adopted the model, the American Bar Association model rule around technology competence, but it's not very defined. It's a very general kind of statement as you need to have technology savvy, some people will say, or competence. There have been some very minor, you know, wording changes for the state version of the ABA model rule, that kind of thing. But there's a real desire to put some more specificity around it. And one of the sessions I participated in at ABA Tech Show was a workshop that was run by Kent Bryce from University of Oklahoma Law School, and where groups of people were doing ideation, brainstorming about how we might put some more specificity around what technology competence means. And those were fantastic conversations. Really enjoyed it. And my co-panelists on the technology competence, Kenton was the moderator, and then we had two law school people, one from Duke and one from Northwestern. And then we had Ivy Gray from WordRake, who's a former practicing lawyer. And part of the conversation that I found unexpected, I think, was how we have to change our view of certain things in the academic world, particularly given the tools that are available. The dean of the Northwestern Law School, for example, was talking about the use of Grammarly in the law school and whether or not there were any ethical considerations around that. When at the end of the day, it's just, it's a tool that people are used to using. I mean, it's no one's plagiarizing anything, you know, so why is there such a visceral negative reaction at sometimes to using these kinds of writing tools in the classroom? And we need to evolve our thinking. I mean, part of technology competence is not only what people need to do to practice better and represent their clients better, but what they need to do just to be better writers, for example. And I thought that was a really interesting, again, it was an unexpected turn. I didn't necessarily think the conversation was going to go that way.
I think we're going to have more conversations like this across all of legal technology as not only the tech continues to evolve, but what we can do with the tech and who has access, because I think the access part of this is going to be a bigger component to a conversation than it might have been in previous years.
Oh, there's no question about it. And I mean, the larger issue of access to justice is where technology, frankly, can make the most difference, I think, in our society. And this is worldwide, you know, the world community. One of the speakers, I'm trying to remember now which one it was, but one of the people on the keynote panel on Thursday morning was talking about access to justice, and that there are, according to her numbers, 92% of the world's population has little or very limited access to justice, even on very routine matters such as civil disputes, divorces, adoptions, you know, all kinds of things that people just deal with in their daily lives. And this is where there's so much potential for technology to make a difference. I mean, one of the keynotes was the founder of Hello Divorce was talking about how they've brought technology to bear to take some of the emotion out of you know, what is inherently a very emotional transaction, if you will, but also making it the outcomes more fair and giving more people access to legal expertise and legal representation. And that's exciting to see how technology can be used that way. I mean, certainly what's been going on in Utah in the sandbox, as they call it, and their experiment with non-lawyer ownership of legal practices has been very much focused on technology and what technology can do to increase access to justice.
I feel like someone listening to this is just in the background about to start yelling about ChatGPT and all of the other. There's somebody out there listening to this going, okay, we'll get there. But talk to me just a little bit about how you see the events you just attended. And then I was lucky enough to be in the audience for International Women's Day, and those conversations took turns that I wasn't expecting either. The financial componentry to International Women's Day discussions in New York really altered the legal conversations as well.
Yeah, and it was a very parallel conversation to the one I just described about access to justice. So this particular panel was really about access to financial literacy, right? And so they were talking about how technology, for example, has enabled people, small investors, to purchase fractional shares. They would never be able to afford 10 shares of a blue chip stock, but they might be able to afford half a share. And technology has enabled us to make that happen. So it's not only opening up access to wealth, you know, it's access to justice, access to wealth, and but also access to literacy about finance. And one of the fascinating pieces of that morning, there was a legal panel and a financial panel, but they were tied together by the fact, not conjecture, it's fact, of a digital divide along gender lines in terms of technology literacy and financial literacy. So the two issues are closely related and have a strong gender component, at least in American society. And looking at how people are thinking about solving those problems, both with technology and with coaching and mentoring and leadership, was Yeah, just absolutely fascinating and frankly very inspiring.
And you've segued this completely for me because the inspiring conversation is where we're sort of headed with some of our smaller events this year as well. We're taking a look at DEI and women in tech and women in legal in ways that we hadn't in previous years. When we start to think about programming, we want to obviously make sure that we're having the kind of world-class education that ILTA is so known for, but we also want to connect our members and our partners in ways that would add value that hadn't been there before.
Well, I mean, one of our programs that I'm most excited about this year is our My Mentor program, which we piloted in 2022 with 19 mentor-mentee groups, pairs. And we have more than 90, 90 in our program right now. And every single person who requested a mentor, so every single mentee who requested a mentor and then went through the application process, every single one was paired with a mentor. That to me is one of the most amazing accomplishments we've had because the education is essential to our mission. And education can also be a path to making connections. And then those connections can sustain you throughout your working life, where people become not only mentors, but friends.
I think that's key for us. At International Women's Day, Sarah Billings said something along the lines of, "We can be the people we needed when we were, 20," and that's
I just
something that.
thought that was so brilliant. Yeah,
Oh,
she's like,
yes.
what can we do? Because there were some younger ladies on our panels, but there were a few, grayer folk like me there as well. And I think it's right to say that the world of 20 years ago for women was much different than it is now. And I love that idea of let's be for the women of today, the women we needed 20 years ago. And one thing I think I even commented to you, Beth Ann, I know this sounds very superficial, but honestly it isn't, is 20 years ago, first of all, you would have been hard pressed to find a panel with all women on it. Let's start with that. But if you had had a panel with all women, everyone would have been wearing kind of the traditional navy blue or black suit with the white blouse and the little, string of pearls and small earrings. We had people in orange and magenta and paisley and sparkly shoes and big jewelry and multiple piercings. And I just love the fact that people feel free to be more authentically themselves, even in a business setting. I mean, again, it sounds superficial, but it isn't. It's truly, and in this case, truly visible progress.
Speaking of progress, and I know we could go on, both of us, very happily on these topics because they are so incredibly important to not only, as you said, our mission, but to our strategic plan. I'd like to take a look at this for us as we enter the last year of our current strategic plan and talk about where we think we're going organizationally, just a little bit, just a teaser. I know we don't want to head down that path because again, we could be here for hours talking about all the good forward progress we're making, but how do you see 2023 really shaping up for us?
Well, the strategic planning process, getting back to things being inspiring, I find very inspiring because it's a great chance to engage in what I call institutional listening, where you're listening as an organization for a specific purpose, asking specific questions. We interviewed folks during ILTACON Europe, during ILTACON. We did four focus groups with our young professionals to watch. We met with members of our partner advisory council, and asked them some very specific questions about how people learn, about what people need from the organization, what kinds of connections they want to make, and how that looks in a world where people aren't commuting into a central city and office every single day, to conduct their business. I would say that as we finish up the current strategic plan, I'm very proud of what we've been able to accomplish in the in you know during a pandemic. We were able to introduce some significant new programs, such as My Mentor. We're able to kick off some other programs, such as Project Find It. But when we started this process in 2019, I certainly thought we were going to be farther along. I mean, I there's no reason to say it otherwise, but the pandemic kind of got in the way. And now we really have to build on the success we've had and focus in on the areas where we didn't make as much progress as we wanted. And I think that's really in the technology area. I mean, if there's one thing I hear over and over and over from Hiltons is we make great content, it's really hard to find it. and that has just simply got to be a priority. The second priority is figuring out, again, what those connections, how we make them, what they look like. Now, in the 2019 world, where people were coming into an office in a major metropolitan area every day, you could set up a lunch and learn pretty easily and get 30 or 40 people, or a breakfast, or a happy hour. But if people are only coming into the office once a week or twice a week or three times a week and not always in the same day, and in some cases not coming in at all, those kind of traditional ways of making connections are more challenging to accomplish. So thinking about how we help people make connections becomes much less about execution and much more about strategy. I mean, there always has to be good execution, but it's figuring out how to make it work. I mean, one of the experiments that I've enjoyed being involved with is building out of our Teams events last year. We developed this group called Teams Masterminds, and it's a group of people that participated in those events. They meet once a month and they talk about stuff to do with Teams, and they compare notes and they take a deep dive. And sometimes we have speakers. And now they've become a great support network for each other. You know, they reach out to each other to help. And it's fantastic because it started with content and it grew into connections out of common interest in the content. And I think there are more and more opportunities like that, and we need to be seeking them out and delivering on them, so that the promise of My ILTA, that personalized, tailored, timely experience, absolutely happens with content, but happens with connections as well. And there's one other thing I'll mention as we finish up the strategic plan that I'm very proud of is, you know, we do a lot of things well, but there are other people that do things well too, and sometimes they have expertise we don't have. So the ability to partner with other organizations to deliver even better programming and services. Now, whether this is a affiliate organization, such as you know, the some of the joint programming we've done with the Legal Marketing Association, the Legal Value Network, whether it's a technology provider such as Legal Tech Hub, we've recently partnered with to provide a much better sponsor directory experience. Whether it's a certifying body such as the Project Management Institute, we were partnering to provide to get ILTA programming accredited for project management continuing education units. These are ways that we can provide more services to our members without really adding cost or staff. And that's fantastic. And it was one of our objectives, one of our strategies for the current strategic plan. And I think we've really come a long way to executing on that.
Do you see a very logical progression for ILTA? Obviously, you've been involved with ILTA from pretty much the jump. You know, you sat through all of the previous iterations. Do you, to some extent, see my mentor program, My ILTA, all the programming that not only continues to provide the connections and the content, as maybe us heading into an ILTA 2.0 or 3.0, or what are we at, version 12 at this juncture?
Yeah. Just in names, we're in version 3.
Yes.
And so we're at least at that. And I don't go all the way back to VSLUG, but you know that name just trips off the tongue. But I certainly go back to LawNet, and then I was around when we became ILTA. I think that one of the things we will see as ILTA continues to mature in the market is more and more of a willingness not only to respond to trends and to provide programming and opportunities to exchange information on trends, but helping lead conversations. I mean, this technology competence one is a great example. And it just seems impossible to have a conversation about technology competence in the practice of law that doesn't include ILTA. And I think that we need to make sure that our volunteer leaders and, as appropriate, our staff leaders, if we have the right expertise, are getting involved in those conversations, because we have knowledge, we have expertise, we have experience to bring to bear, and we shouldn't be afraid to do that. You know, we have a very humble corporate culture, and I favor that. But we also have to recognize where we have expertise to bring to bear and not be afraid to lead and participate in those conversations.
Well, then I'm glad we could take this opportunity to spring forward, if you will.
Absolutely, Beth Ann. And I look forward to talking again in the warmer weather.
Yes.
I think it's snowing where both of us are right now.
It is. But again, thank you for your time. And I look forward to some more conversations for 2023.
Absolutely. Thanks, Beth Ann. And thanks, everyone, for listening.